Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me as always is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Todd. How are you today?
I'm doing awesome.
Good, good. So, you know, we've been talking on your show here about apartment investing, and we've gone through a lot of the team members that are needed to be a successful investor. So what we wanted to go over today is how to underwrite a deal. And so what are the different aspects that we're going to look at? What are the different formulas that we might consider? And how do we get that information? So why don't you start us off, Todd, and give us a little bit overview on that.
Yeah, well, you know, John, first of all, I mean, underwriting is going to lead us to our purchase price, which ultimately is going to be, this is going to really help determine if we're going to be successful or not. Of course, management and the process throughout is going to play into that as well. But if you improperly underwrite and you make an offer for too much, it's really easy to lose on a deal. And you know, before we started recording this, and this will be a whole episode, I think we were talking about where we are in the market. And I think anybody can agree right now in 2018, mid-February 2018, we are higher. We are not at the bottom. Okay. I think anybody can say that. We're not at the bottom. I don't know if we're at the top, but we're not at the bottom. And prices have gone up in multifamily and any every aspect of real estate. And so we know we need to start being very conservative with their numbers and make sure that if we do buy a building, we're not going to lose it during any type of downturn whenever that does happen. So that's, you know, underwriting, it can change in market cycles for sure. It could definitely change. Your strategy can change. The fundamentals of underwriting, you know, 1 + 1 still does equal 2. But the actual like feeling and thought process and why are we willing to pay that price can change in different market cycles. And your overall conservative, you know, if you're being a little more aggressive, I would be a little more aggressive in a down cycle market than I would be in an up cycle where we're closer to the top than we are to the bottom. Then I'm really conservative, which is where I'm at right now. So that's kind of the 10,000 foot view of underwriting. We want to be in this market cycle. In my opinion, you need to be extremely conservative. One of the things that I do to help me be conservative is I look at historicals, John. So when we look back on the last 20 years or so, we can see what cap rates have been. We can see where rents have been and how they've been trending. We can see where vacancy rates have been and where they've trended. And we can use that to our advantage. We can go, okay, rents are increasing right now by, let's say, 8%. But historically, we know in that market that rents have increased by 2.9%. So what am I going to underwrite? Am I going to underwrite 8% and assume that we're going to just keep on, you know, just plowing through and raising rents? Or am I going to go, hey, you know what? Realistically, we're probably closer to that 2.9% eventually. It'd be great if we have 8% for the next 5 years and then I sell the thing, right? But what happens if we go down to 2% or less? If I underwrote at 8%, I'm doing really bad. But if I underwrote at historical, I'm doing a lot better. And same thing with vacancy rates. You know, I see people putting in their underwriting, brokers especially, putting in their underwriting, you know, 3-4% vacancy. Is that really realistic? So.
Yeah, so that's definitely some really good things to be thinking about. What would you suggest to the listeners as to where they should look for that data?
And you know, you actually can hit on that too. So one of the big things I think is reaching out to brokers because they have firsthand experience of where they're at. The other thing is property management companies. They're seeing where rents are at. They're seeing where vacancies are at, and they're seeing real vacancies and real rents. They're not seeing pro forma data. They're seeing performance data, and they can tell you, yeah, that place across the street, they are getting $1,000 a month for a two bedroom. But you know what? Their two bedrooms are also 250 square feet bigger than yours. They've got granite countertops. Yours have laminate. They've got cabinets that are from 2010. Yours are from 1961. You know, they can tell you those kind of things. And this is why, and you'll never get $1,000 a month for rent, even if you make yours as nice, because yours are 250 square feet smaller. You just have to understand. So a broker might go, hey, you can get those rents. That's what they do across the street. But somebody like a property manager can be more realistic about it. And brokers might be realistic about it too. I'm not saying that they aren't going to be, but, you've been doing some research, John, on where to find some stuff. So go ahead and tell.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to point out what you just were touching on there. It's good to get data from multiple sources and kind of trust, but verify from different perspectives, because everybody's going to have a different resources, different data available. So it's not like they're trying to mislead you, but they might not have the full picture available.
Right.
So yeah. And then there's other big data aggregators out there like CoStar or Reis, or that's REIS. And there's several other websites out there. some of the issues with that is they have very expensive monthly subscription rates. So, you know, a broker who's dealing in that day to day, it's much more reasonable for them to afford that versus an investor who's going to buy one property a year or a couple of properties a year. So, you know, you could potentially get that subscription yourself and just have the data there ready to go, or you could, you know, get as we've talked about in several episodes, you know, get to know your brokers who are experts in that area, and typically they're going to have access to the data. So,
yeah, so they'll have access to the data. You just say, hey, can you get me a CoStar report on, or a REIS report, or whatever software they're using on that? There's Axiometrics. There's all kinds of software that can get you really good detailed data. So just ask them for that. You know, I want rent comps. I want what stuff selling per door in this area. What, you know, and then you can also potentially get some appraisals. Hey, have you sold any properties in this area before? Well, you have. You sold the property next door. Cool. Do you have a copy of that appraisal that came in? So stuff like that can be really helpful. And then we talked to you the last time about team members, and one of the team members is an appraiser, and they can get you a lot of data. So most people want to see you succeed. Not everybody, but most people want to see you succeed. So if you talk to the right people and enough people, you're going to get good data. And then other sources are apartments.com, Rentometer, Craigslist, you know, just going on there, or just shopping. And I don't mean going to get groceries. I mean, going to an apartment building and looking at what they have. You know, there's got to be an apartment building likely within a half mile or so, depending on the size of your city. Go to that apartment building and pretend like you're a tenant looking to rent. And that way you can see what's going on. You can see what type of units they have, and oh, they're getting $850 for that unit. I'm only getting $650, and mine are actually potentially nicer after a little bit of renovation. Cool. I can get $850, I think, for this thing.
So one of the key indicators and formulas that everybody talks about is the capitalization rate, or cap rate. So let's talk briefly about that. What's that formula, and how do people weigh that when they're consideration?
So really quite simply, cap rate is just what a building would return if you paid cash for it. So if you buy a $1 million building and it's got a 7 cap, it's going to get you, without a mortgage, you're going to make $70,000 on it a year. That's at a 7 cap. At a 10 cap, you would make $100,000 on it per year. So all you're doing to get the cap rate, you're taking the NOI, the net operating income, which is your income, your rent that you're getting, plus any other, you know, laundry or anything like that, minus your expenses. And with that, personally, some people say it's not. Personally, I include my reserve account as well. So every year I'm adding to my reserve account. I'm putting in $275 to $350 per unit into my reserve account. That's going to depend on, you know, the age and the condition of the building. But so that's my, so it, what it is my, again, the net operating income, the NOI, is your gross revenue. So your rent minus all your expenses, every single expense. Again, we don't have a mortgage on it, so it's not including a mortgage. NOI is never including the mortgage. And then it's divided by the purchase price. Okay, so if you take those two numbers, and that gives you your cap rate. What if you don't know what the cap rate, what if you don't know what the purchase price is, but you're trying to figure that out? All you would do is take the NOI, divide that by the cap rate in the area. So that's why it's important to know the cap rate in the area, because we want to determine what the value is. So we would say, you know, NOI divided by cap rate, let's say the cap is at 7. You want to make sure that purchase price, you don't go over that rate. Otherwise, you're paying over value for it.
Yep. Great. Yeah, and it's interesting that you said which things are included. You know, depending on who you talk to, it might vary slightly. Because I've learned that you don't include the capital improvements or the reserve account, and also the leasing fees, because those aren't, I suppose it depends on the size of the building, but you know, you don't necessarily have leasing fees all the time. So those aren't operating expenses, is what I've learned.
Yeah. So, that may be the, I wouldn't even call it the right answer. That's some people's opinion. For me, those are real expenses, right?
Sure.
And so why wouldn't you add in real expenses? You are going to eventually have a vacancy, and you are going to eventually have to move somebody in. So you're eventually going to have a leasing fee. Mm-hmm. Eventually, some things are going to go wrong with the building. And so eventually you're going to have to tap into your replacement reserve. So yep. Why not add that into your expenses? So for me, yep. I want to know all my expenses, and I don't care what somebody else says. That's how I do it.
Sure.
And yes, you are right though. Some people do, some people don't. But for me, that's the way I do it. That's the way I would tell people to do it. Cause sure. you want to know the real picture. Why don't you want to know the real picture in my mind?
Sure.
Which is why I look for that.
So in the reports that I prepare, and not to argue with you, but just to compare, the reports that I prepare, they still include those expenses as leasing fee, capital improvements, mm-hmm. but they're on a line below mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
And it affects the cash flow,
yeah.
which, you know, a lot of people really want to focus on what's the bottom line, how much my cash flow.
Yeah.
So those expenses are still included there, but as just as far as calculating the capitalization rate,
yeah,
that those are the numbers I include in my formula.
Yeah. So for me on cap rates, right? Like I don't get too caught up in cap rates. I shouldn't say I don't get too caught up. I do pay a lot of attention to them. Like you want to know where right. cap rates are, but you also have to look at the whole big picture. Cap rates are just one small portion of it. Mm-hmm. The reason I do get a little caught up in cap rates is that a lot of people do focus on them. So you do want to be very aware of cap rates because a lot of people will buy based solely, almost solely on cap. So, but one of the biggest mistakes, in my opinion, is that, you know, people underwrite on like current cap rates. Again, they're not looking at historical cap rates. So if you're in a city that has historical cap rates in the type of market you're looking in, the submarket of, let's say, 7.5, and today it's selling for 6.5. Are you making a mistake? I would say yes. You likely are making a mistake unless something big has happened in that area. Let's say major jobs have come in, revitalization of the area. You know, for instance, the neighborhood in St. Paul I used to live in is way nicer than it was in 1990, it was a crime-ridden neighborhood. Now it's really nice. Same thing goes with like Northeast Minneapolis. Most people know that. Northeast used to be kind of just this cruddy neighborhood. People didn't want to live there. There's a lot of blight, crime, stuff like that. Now it's completely changed to, you know, what it is. So in that case, you can't just look at historical. You do have to think about, you know, what's happened in that area, but you want to be conservative in it, and you want to understand that if we're in a hot market, cap rates are compressed, and as that market cools off, cap rates are then going to start to go up.
Yeah, great. So you mentioned that cap rates are not the only thing. What are the other factors that you like to focus in on as the other parts of the puzzle?
So I don't want to go too crazy into detail because it's a lot of it's hard to explain just on a podcast. But some of the things I look at is what my cash on cash return would be. So meaning I put money into the deal, right? So I'm going to have a down payment and then I'm going to have my actual profit. So what my actual profit is, not just my NOI. If I've got a mortgage on it, it'd be my NOI minus my mortgage. Okay. So let's just say that's, $70,000. If that's my profit, $70,000 per year, and my down payment was $700,000, okay, what my cash on cash return then would be is 10%, right? So we would take your total profit in a year, $70,000, divide that by your cash you invested into it, $700,000. That gives you your cash on cash of 10%. So that's important. What is your cash actually making? And is it worth doing that deal? Because could you take your cash and do it somewhere else, right? Could you take your cash and put it in the stock market? Maybe it's an easier thing to go to the stock market, make 10%. Now, the problem with cash on cash, though, it's a very non-sophisticated way to look at it, right? Because you're just looking at what you're making on a yearly basis, but you're not looking at what you're making overall in this project. Because as anybody knows, if you leverage something, you're actually making money on the principal reduction every single year. So your tenants are paying for your mortgage, and every year you're paying off, let's say, $100,000 per year. And it obviously, a mortgage isn't just straight every single year the same, but for simplicity, you're paying off $100,000 a year. And then you've got depreciation, you've got rent increases, all that kind of stuff. So really you can't just, cash on cash is a really simplistic, like, does this get us there on a yearly basis of where we want to be? Then we look at what's called IRR, or internal rate of return. And I'm not going to go into detail on that, John, because it's really complicated. But basically, it's overall in the life of that investment when you sell it. So we usually project it out, let's say, 5 years. We're saying when we sell it, what would our return on investment be throughout that entire time? Okay. And you can, there's an IRR calculator right on Excel spreadsheets. So if you've got an Excel spreadsheet, which most people have access to it, you can actually type in, there's a formula for it. You just kind of got to know how to do it. And I can't explain it on a podcast. I can't. But that's what we're looking at more, is what's our IRR. That's a big thing that I look at because I've got investors in my deal. So when I'm looking at what can I make my investor, I'm looking at the IRR. That's the most important thing I look at, is what can I make my investors as far as an internal rate of return. And I'm looking at making them between 16 and 18%. Ideally, I'd like to make more, but try to be very conservative, making between that 16 to 18%, which is a really good return. What else? That's really the main metrics that I'm looking at. There's definitely more metrics that other people look at, but those are the main ones that I focus on.
Yeah. A couple of the other ones, just to mention, there's a gross rent multiplier.
Right.
There's a debt coverage ratio, which...
For sure. That's actually really important to mention, actually. Debt coverage ratio, you want to make sure you've got a good debt coverage ratio. My minimum is it's got to cover 1.5 debt coverage ratio. But banks usually will require 1.2 or 1.25.
Right. There's profit margin. There's rent-to-value ratio. Those are... you know, not as important, but just different ways to look at a property.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And the, you know, what I would tell people is, as they get their underwriting kind of set up and started, you'll just continue to grow it. And I look back at my initial underwriting back in, like, you know, the 2008-09 when I first started, and look at what I've got now, and I laugh at what I used to do and what I thought I used to, what I used to do when I started. I was like, wow, this is really sophisticated. Boy, I got this thing down. And now I look back and go, oh my gosh, that was so elementary when I first started. And I'm sure my guess is another 10 years from now, I'm going to look back at what I've got right now and go, geez, that's so elementary. I can't believe I was just looking at it that way. So you just continue to develop your models. I think that's important. And I think it's important to have your own. I don't think it's a bad thing to purchase somebody's. So like, there's people that sell their modeling, but I do think it's important that you build your own based on that, and then can change it to fit you and your investing style, because everybody's got their own investing style. And even if you're going to just follow that person's model precisely, I still think it's good to take theirs and rebuild it, because it helps you understand it.
Yeah.
So my modeling's based off of, a few other people's modeling stuff that I found online and just kind of cobbled together. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, I've just advanced it. I've made it bigger and better, and at least what I think is bigger and better. So let's go back to underwriting, though. When you're underwriting a deal, I've talked about how it's really important to be conservative and not overproject, especially if you've got investors. That to me is one of the most important things, and one thing that I get really nervous when I talk to some people that are doing purchasing, and I'm not going to give too much of example because I don't want to call people out. But I just get nervous when I talk to some people and they're telling me kind of how they're underwriting. I'm going, how is that ever going to work? Like, it could work, right, if the market continues where we're at. But if the market just has a little crack in it, you're going to lose a lot of money, a lot of your investors' money, or at least just not make them even close to their returns. And even how I underwrite, I could still not do very well. But at least what I am looking at is, when I model something, I take and I try to put in numbers that are really low. Numbers that are so low that I almost laugh and go, this one, it'll never happen. Right. And if I can put in a number and go, oh my gosh, I just can't see that happening ever, then I know that I'm on the right track. Right. If I go, you know, take the rent down from $750 a month down to, you know, $625 a month, and that still keeps us in the black, then I can laugh and go, I don't think that'll ever happen. Like, I doubt that'll ever happen. If I can take the vacancy rate from 92% and drop it down to 70% and I'm still in the black, I can laugh and go, geez, you know, I don't think that'll ever happen. We'd be having to do something really wrong. It wouldn't be just the market. So that's what I look at, is if I can laugh at my numbers and still be in the black, it's a good deal.
Sure. Yeah, well, and to speak to that, it's a good idea to, when you run your numbers, your spreadsheet or whatever, you can have maybe three different scenarios, you know, depending on how far you want to take it. But, you know, probably a realistic scenario, then a worst case scenario, and then maybe a little bit higher best case scenario. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And we never know the best case scenario and the worst case scenario truly.
Right.
But at least we can look at where we're going to be at. And that way we're a lot more prepared, especially if the worst case scenario, you know, does come about. We've already thought about it at least. We maybe don't know the exact plan, but at least we've already thought about it. We already know that this could happen, and we're just going to be a lot more prepared if it does start to happen, of you know, where to go, I think.
Yep. Yeah, well, I think that about covers it as far as, you know, how to underwrite it. If somebody wants to know more specifics about these formulas, you know, there's lots of places they can search for those specific formulas. And then, or if they wanted to, like you mentioned, buy somebody's, you know, that it's probably out there somewhere. Or there's probably lots of places you can get it for free, just to, as far as like a spreadsheet, and just to start plugging in some numbers.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll, you know, this will be on the show notes, the blog, and of course will be on, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll be able to see it too. And I go in a decent amount of detail in some of this stuff on the blog.
Okay.
One last thing I wanted to point out before we exit here is when I'm looking at doing my underwriting, I'm underwriting on future value as well. And again, very conservatively. But one thing I wanted to kind of mention is if you can buy a value-add apartment building, the power of that, it can be very huge. And just for a verbal example, if you've got a 100-unit building, right, and you raise the rents by $100, that's what, $10,000 a year, $10,000 a month, $120,000 a year. Now, you're going to add some expenses. So let's just say that's $100,000 profit. If that market is selling at an 8% cap rate, you just added $1.25 million to your property. $1.25 million to your property just by raising rents only $100 a month. So we can project that in our calculations. We just have to be careful that we understand, can we actually get $100? If you're shopping apartments and you go, oh yeah, this apartment's at $100 and all the other ones are maybe at like 60, 75, 50, I wouldn't underwrite $100. I would only underwrite $100 if we go, all the other apartments in the area are $150 higher than ours and right, we can easily get it there. Then we go, okay, let's just project $100 just to be safe. So that's a huge, huge way to add values if you can raise rents, or if we can, you know, do other stuff like charging utilities back, or, you know, adding new income streams. If you start adding for pet fees, people love pets. Millennials have a ton of pets. I just read that there's like, that's massive for millennials to offer pets, and they're more than willing to pay a $25 or a $50 or whatever your market says pet fee. Same thing with storage, with parking, you know, different types of vending, all kinds of stuff. So don't miss out on some added income streams. And then same thing with lowering expenses. You can lower expenses too and really compound your value of your property. So super important as you're underwriting to think about those things. How can we add value to the property? Just don't be too lofty. Don't get stuck in the shiny object thing of, oh my gosh, there's all these things to do. We're going to raise the value this much. And then all of a sudden you can only do half of what you thought you could do. Mm-hmm. So just be careful with that as well. Any other comments, John?
Just regarding the expenses, I know that could be a huge one there. Even if you can't raise rents, but you find out that they're spending way too much on lawn care or snow removal or whatever it is, you know, if you can reduce that by changing the vendor or doing something about it, you know, that too can increase the value like you've talked about there.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. So I think we've talked enough about underwriting. It's a big topic. So again, go to our blog article and really look into it a lot more. But a very important topic to talk about. One of the most important in my mind. The next other really important thing that we'll hit more on is managing the property, or managing the manager that manages the property. But, you know, buying that property is extremely important, and how do you underwrite it. So awesome, John. So we'll wrap it up. Anything else you want to add before we call it quits here?
That's it. Go get them.
All right, man. We will talk to you next week, and make every day a Saturday.
You too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today, but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.